My name is Zoe, the co-host of Not Superwoman. I am the granddaughter of French, English and Irish immigrants now living on Burrurong land. I acknowledge that we meet on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land in which this podcast was recorded. We pay respects to elders past and present. I recognise and respect their cultural heritage, beliefs and relationships with this land.
Welcome to this week's episode of Not Superwoman.
We're back and we're bringing you another fabulous guest.
Yes, this one is exciting. It's something a bit different. We got the pleasure of sitting down with the very inspiring Caroline Courtis, who appeared on the Australian Survivor Series Titans versus Rebels, and she made it all the way through the 47 days and came second on the show, so runner-up to the whole season. And it was such a pleasure to sit down with her and talk about the realities of not only the participating in the series and the nitty-gritty details of that.
I.e. having a shower and doing a poo.
Zoe and I were just both like just desperate to know why go and challenge yourself like that.
And like how could you not brush your teeth?
Yes.
But
Caroline is a midwife and had also an entrepreneurial business, Mamalicious, where she was a PT and a postnatal care provider. And then she is a mum in her with three kids and in her mid-50s and just had reached this point in her life where she wanted to go and finally do something for herself but also to challenge herself. And it was just this beautiful reminder about really what growth comes from pushing yourself outside of your boundaries, but also seeing a woman of her age in her era doing something so incredibly challenging, both physically and emotionally.
And mentally, like it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I just can't even fathom doing this. That's why this just was so intriguing for me.
Yes. Yeah, because Caroline and I did chat prior to recording and we talked about how the representation of women in her age on TV and in shows and stuff is so limited to none. And she, you know, the feeling that you get as you get older as a woman that creeps in, that you start feeling quite invisible. And so she was like, I just really wanted to go and show my kids and do something for myself and represent a woman in the middle age of her life that is capable and able and strong and resilient and
vivacious and seen.
Yes.
Like she was in, you know, okay, I'm going to be completely honest here. I've never watched an episode of Survivor in my entire life. However, I did watch the 20-minute recap and I was just completely consumed by it.
Yes.
She's so honest, wears her heart on her sleeve. She's endearing. You like her.
Yes.
And you want to like her and, yeah, it was interesting to watch her.
And in the clip, which we will share on our social media, is just all the highlights and also the lowlights, like, you know, having one of her young tribal member guy, colleagues or friends on the show say, what do you even bring to the game? Why are you even here? And all this sort of stuff. And it's sort of like this challenging question of, like, I think the deservingness of being allowed to be there and showing everyone that, you know, whilst working a career your whole life and caring in a carer's role and then raising a family and being a wife, like, you know, she brings, whilst may not be physically matched to some of the younger guys and some of the younger girls and whatever, she had so much to give, which she did do, and she ticked every box and succeeded in our eyes. And
well, I think the general public, like she spoke off camera about the amazing response she's had and messages from all these women,
yeah,
and some men just saying how inspiring and how much it's changed their mentality.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, isn't that what it's about?
Yeah, exactly. So we're excited to share this beautiful interview and episode with Caroline Courtis from Australian Survivor. Welcome to this week's episode of Not Superwoman. We've sort of met someone that we're very excited to have here with us who really tests the title of Not Superwoman, because we have Caroline Courtis, who came second on the Australian TV series of Survivor, Titans versus Rebels. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you, girls. Thanks for having me.
I'm like giddy with excitement because I've got thousands of questions running through my head, because I just can't comprehend ever doing this.
Yeah, the way in which you challenge yourself. I know, I was the same. When I was writing out the questions, I was like, my goodness, wow. Yeah. Like,
what the hell is she doing this for?
But what an experience too. And then where did it take you? So let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
Because when I was talking to her over the phone and sort of trying to wrap my head around the concept, I was like, what fascinates me is trying to understand the driving reasons for someone wanting to apply. Mm. And, like, there are so many different characters on that show. And I say characters because everyone's got such different journeys.
Definitely.
And especially with this series, they divided it into titans that were sort of career and industry leaders, and then rebels, which was considered the sort of free-spirited new path forgers. I don't know how you describe it.
Yeah. But no, that makes sense. And what that application process is like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start there. What brought you to apply?
So I've always been I would call myself a super fan. So I've always been a huge fan of Survivor, like crazy fan. I started watching American Survivor like back in 2000. My son was born that year. Richard Hatch won that year. And I thought, oh, wow, what a crazy notion to be stranded on an island with nothing, with, you know, 20 strangers or whatever, and all these incredible physical challenges, and, you know, to be completely taken away from everything that you know and love. And the show really fascinated me. And then the more that I watched it, like in the last probably 5 years, I've easily watched all the US seasons probably 3 times. Mm-hmm. And we're up to the 46th season that they're showing right now. I've watched all the Australian seasons, and I was just fascinated by it. And then in 2019, I turned around to my husband one night and I said, I really like to apply for Survivor. And he knew how much I loved watching it, and he's like, okay, like, if that's something you really want to do, go for it. And then so I went through the process then, and obviously I was unsuccessful. And I thought to myself, last year when the applications came out, I got a notification to say that they were out, and I thought, this is my year, mate. I'm going to go. And so I spoke to my husband and said, right, I'm applying. My middle daughter, Lara, is a producer. And so we just went out onto the beach one day, went out into my backyard one day, filmed the audition video. So you have to do a 3-minute audition video. And then there's an online application process, which it takes hours. Like, it's probably a 2 to 3 hour, very, very detailed application. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. And so just gave it absolutely everything. And then the other thing I did is I stalked a few casting producers on Instagram, DM'd, and ended up getting, you know, putting my application in, putting my audition in, and then getting a call back to say, yeah, we want to talk to you. So we went from there.
Oh, my gosh. It's just a very
It's giving
exciting.
Me goosebumps.
I know. Because we will talk about this in more detail, but your history is that for a long time you have been a midwife.
Yes.
And then you're very entrepreneurial, and you had a side business with Mamalicious, which was PT training and postnatal support.
Yes.
And so what was there a tipping point or a change where you were just like, – I just really want to do something different?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a mum of 3 kids. I'm a wife to my beautiful husband. I've run a really successful business doing, as you said, postnatal support and personal training for pregnant and postnatal mums, been a midwife and a nurse for such a long time, and I just really felt like I wanted to do something for me. Like, and I wanted, you know, like, you're tested at work and you're tested through your children and all those kind of things, but I didn't want to be, you know, I wanted to show my kids that there was more to me than that. Mm. And, you know, your kids love you no matter what, but I wanted to see what I was capable of. Was I as tough as I thought I could be? Was I as strong as I thought I could be? And it turns out I am. So, it was a really amazing journey, and I just have nothing but praise for what I got out of it. I know, despite the outcome, it was a hugely positive experience for me. Yeah.
You made it to the end.
Like, yes. Oh my God.
I got my torch snuffed.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It is insane.
That is a huge effort.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 47 days in sort of stranded, for the want of a better term.
In Samoa.
Yeah. And Samoa was, you know, the conditions were hard. It was really hard. We got there and it rained for 3 days nonstop. And so you might have seen that we didn't win the first challenge, and so we didn't have fire, and so we didn't eat. We had coconuts that we found. The only other thing that we had was water, but we had to build our own shelter. We had to set our camp up, and we had the clothes on our back. So and it rained, and it's like,
this is like my idea of hell.
I know, and it was, you know, like, I'm not even a camper, so I thought to myself, you know, just get on with this, Caroline. Like, this is what you really wanted. You wanted to do this so badly. So. Mm. Yeah.
Gosh, it's so funny when you said earlier that you wanted to do something to show not only to yourself but to your children a different side of you, and then test your – I identify with that a lot. Like, I think that I've often referred in the podcast, like, I'm been at home full time.
Yeah.
The kids just see me cut lunch boxes and, you know, run errands and do the – mundane chores, and quite often my imagination gets the better of me of like, they don't even know that I can do this or I used to do this or they know nothing about who I am outside of my mum role.
Yep. And mum wife.
And so I totally hear you about setting yourself up to do something that completely challenges them in a way of seeing you in a new light and yourself. I think it's a really healthy exercise women often don't afford themselves to do
the opportunity to do that. They think, oh my God, but what if I leave my kids? You know, are they going to be okay without me? How's my husband going to cope? But you need to do stuff to fill your cup. You need to do stuff to fulfill you, because then you're going to be better at being that mother or that wife or that partner or whatever. But I think, you know, as women, I know that, you know, when I was a young mum, you know, the last person that was taken care of was me, and it was for a long time. And I felt really, really good taking control of that and saying to myself, I deserve this, and I'm going to go and try and do this, and I'm going to give it my absolute best shot to get on this show and to see what I'm capable of.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's just incredible that you've had it as a dream and you've made it a reality.
I still pinch myself. I agree. Yeah.
Because it's so hard to take that step of thinking about it and wanting to do it and kind of manifesting it and then actually doing it.
Yeah, that's right.
And do you think your daughter helped you with that, as she's a producer?
No, because I knew what I wanted to do. Like, all of it was my ideas in terms of what I wanted to show. And I wanted to show humour, and I wanted to show you know, take the piss out of the show a little bit in my audition video. But it was great fun. And then she kind of recorded it all and then pieced it together.
Yes.
And put music behind it, and it was awesome.
Because it is so good funny. To have someone help you do that, because as we know with the podcast editing, all that stuff, it is hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so when I did it, when I did my audition video in 2019, like I wrote out a script and I had it on a iPad so that I could read it because I had so much I wanted to say. It was a completely different process this time. I just did it off the cuff. I just did it really naturally. And I got through to auditions last time, but this time it was different. I felt like I was being seen and that they potentially did really, really want me. So, yeah.
Ooh, goosebumps. I'm like, ooh. So do you think it was everything that you'd hoped for?
Oh, gosh. I think it was everything and more. Like, I think when you get to my age, you don't place so much emphasis on what might happen. I'm definitely a person that I just want to let it happen to me. I'm not going to place those expectations on things, because I think when you place expectations on things, you've got that there's room to be let down, or and you'd rather be, you know, have it exceeded than not even met. And so it was definitely everything that I thought it was going to be. I knew it was going to be really hard, like challenge me in it in terms of like when I go to sleep at night, girls, like I put earplugs in my ears and I read my Kindle to go to sleep, you know.
I pop the electric blankie on.
exactly.
I laugh because we're exactly the same.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And so then when you're sleeping on a palm frond on the sand by the ocean and your little, you know, your spare jumper is your pillow with your bag, that's it, you know. And I was really fortunate. I had Nathan's jacket to keep me warm at night, but that was literally keeping me warm. Like I had my trackie on, a jumper on, a t-shirt on, and nothing ever dried, right? Everything was always
so
damp.
Humid.
That's right. Everything was always damp. Like none of my clothing ever dried. I probably took the worst clothing. But I would curl up in a ball in Nathan's jacket at nighttime, literally curl up in a ball. And yes, and I would, you know, by the third night when I hadn't slept for three nights. And I was running on adrenaline.
And that is a form of torture.
Yeah, yes, yeah. But I actually felt okay. I was just so excited to be there. And I was like, I'm going to really bloody do this. I spoke to myself on day four and said, Caroline, you need to sleep tonight. Just bloody go to sleep. And I did. And from then on, I actually slept pretty good.
Quite well.
Yeah.
So if we talk about like nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the list of items you're allowed to bring in?
Okay. So you've got the clothes on your back. So you're allowed to bring up to 6 or 7 pieces of clothing.
So you can really layer here?
Yes. So I wore a pair of bathers. I wore my long pants. I had a singlet, a shirt and a jumper and a pair of bike shorts. Your runners are separate, so they're not counted as a piece of your clothing. And then I wore my Crocs. And I've never worn Crocs in my life, but like they were amazing. I slept with them on every night.
Sponsorship.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. No, seriously.
To be honest, I wouldn't mind a pair.
Yeah. They were fantastic. Like I walked, you know, went to challenges in my Crocs. I slept in my Crocs. I walked to the ocean in my Crocs.
So what about hygiene items?
No hygiene items, mate. There's nothing.
Okay. So hang on. Then that to me, that I think about female and male.
Yes.
Like, is there any differentiation with gender because of what women have to?
So I was 55 when I was out there, so I don't have a period anymore. I've gone through menopause.
Yeah.
And so, but I know for the girls that were out there, they obviously provided what they needed to provide.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, maybe not. It's Survivor.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, well, God. You'd think that there'd be a lot.
But things like, okay, because I'm thinking
but there's
like
no soap.
Toothbrush,
no.
Soap, razor, nothing. Tweezers.
Nothing.
No, well,
nothing.
That sort of sounds more like I'm a celebrity, get me out of here vibes than Survivor.
Harsh. What do you say? But I'm like
slightly more mollycoddled.
Like just something. But no, nothing.
Nothing.
Teeth. So what did you do with teeth? Like, did you?
So we did survivalist training in the week before we went out on the show, and the great guy that showed us what to do. He showed us this particular tree that we could go to, take a small thin branch off. You'd peel the bark off that and you would brush your teeth with that. And like, I just kept one in my bra the whole time. Like,
great idea.
Constantly, like,
yeah,
because I can't stand having yucky teeth.
Yes.
And, but I felt like, you know, you're not eating any sugar or any crap out there. So you're eating rice, beans and coconut and water. So I didn't feel like anybody really smelt. I didn't smell, yes, any bad breath or anything like that. And I felt like, and I'd, you know, I'd get up in the morning and I would go down to the ocean and I would wash my face with sand and water, wash my hands,
oh,
wash
sand
my
and
feet.
Water,
yes.
That's clever.
Yeah. Mm. And then, you know, brush my teeth and just kind of had a little routine that I would do each
day. Because I was watching you throughout the show. You were very glowy. You were constantly
not really
sweat and humidity.
Did you get to take skincare? Because you looked very glowy.
Oh my God. I can't even believe you said that. I look like 100
no,
out there.
No, you didn't.
I thought you looked great.
Yeah.
It's something about, I guess, as what you were saying, the natural living and going back to basics.
Yes, but I'm a person that I don't leave home without putting mascara, like a bit of colour in my cheeks and at least lipstick on, like, or lip gloss. I never, like, I don't think my kids and my husband obviously see without makeup on, but I'm just not that person. I like to go out feeling nice.
Yes.
And so to go out there and do that, I literally felt like I was naked. Like, I
yes,
felt like I was
agreed,
completely stripped back, because mm-hmm, that's not the me that, like, all my colleagues at work and all my friends and even a lot of my family see me as. Like, they always see me put together, and I was not put together out there. Yeah. But you just have to let all that go. And it actually was quite freeing and quite like, I really liked it. I just thought, God, you don't have to wake up and worry about your phone. You don't have to wake up and worry about what your hair looks like, putting face creams and serums and doing your face. I was ready in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It was cool. It usually takes me about half
so
an
we
hour.
Should book in.
Look, it's I found that like a difficult experience, but a really rewarding experience for me, because like, I came home and I was like, don't need to really worry about washing my hair today or tomorrow, you know, like, definitely more relaxed about all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so what were some of the most challenging moments? Like, I think about on a day-to-day basis where I'm like, I just need to be alone. I just
yes,
need to get away from people, like, and have some quiet time, or I really need a good night's sleep, or like those sort of things. What what did you do when you were hitting those peaks and troughs of
There were a few things. I mean, I was really lucky. I had Kitty out there, and so
yeah, I loved Kitty.
Yeah, and so Kitty was, I mean, she was absolutely wonderful out there. Such a great mate to have out there, and you know, we laughed, we talked, we cried, we whatever. But there were times when you felt like, oh my God, you know, this is really hard. And if I did want to just go and spend some time on my own, like, you could easily just go for a walk and walk down the beach, go and sit on some rocks. There was always a time when we, especially when we had a day at camp, where everybody just wanted to go off at some point and just have some time on their own. Because when you're thrust into this situation, I mean, we were on tribes of 12 and you're with 11 strangers, like people that you've never met before. So you have to get to know them really quickly, very personally. You're in very tight spaces with each other. You're sleeping beside other people that you don't know, which was obviously crazy. But we all just adapted really well. And so when we did need time to go and have some time, you could just walk into the jungle, you could go for a walk down the path, you could go to the beach.
So cameras on you the whole time you're doing that or not?
No, so if you were on your own, you could walk off on, like,
yes,
you didn't need a camera on your own. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
if you
were
in conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so they want to catch everything on camera. Like, if it's not caught on camera, it didn't happen. So those moments that you wanted to go and take off by yourself, yeah, you were by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because I'm watching it through some of the clips and episodes, the what dawned on me on how much I should never apply for this show was the way in which you had to navigate relationships mm-hmm. and people. Mm-hmm. And I would become so paranoid, and like I am already pretty sensitive and a bit of an emotional roller coaster. Zoe's looking so concerned. Like, she was like, yes, you would be so bad at this show. Because how did you cope with like, okay, it's okay when people walk away by themselves, mm-hmm. but would it start to – would the isolation and the way in which you had to just – you were living so raw, like – rawly, mm-hmm. Did it start to sort of create paranoia? Did you start to think, are they pretending to walk down the beach to then turn left and have a secret meeting?
Look, it's, I think all my years as a midwife and a nurse, you get to read people pretty quickly, and you know, and because I'm a little bit older than everybody, there were times, like I know that like in recent podcasts I heard that Valeria and Viola thought that I was following them. I never was following them. That was never a conscious thought for me to go and follow somebody to think. I would have said it on camera if I thought it. But yes, sometimes there were times when you saw somebody go off into the jungle with somebody else or go off for a chat or whatever, and you think, oh, are they talking about me? I mean, that's just the game. Like, that's part of it, and it's accepting that. We came up with a phrase on, like, oh, I think it was day 3 or 4 called radical acceptance. So we just had to there was so much we had to accept.
Just accept.
Like the cold, the heat, the
dampness,
yes, the rain, the lack of food, the, you know, the paranoia. There were so many things that you just had to accept, and like I didn't want to be that paranoid person.
It would ruin the experience. Yeah, I think
it's not who I wanted to be out there. I must admit, the most worried I was, I looking in retrospect, was not being that first vote off. So, you know, being that person, because I was female, the older woman, probably the weakest person on the tribe, I didn't want to be that first person voted off. And so I was just lucky that I got into a great alliance really quickly. But if I hadn't, like, I would have felt incredibly paranoid. And I remember having thoughts that day before we went to tribal council thinking, oh my God, like, is this all, are they just all talking bullshit to me, or am I the one going home? And then I got into tribal council and I knew I was absolutely fine. I felt really good with all the people around me. But yeah, and it's having trust in people that you don't know, and you know, normally trust is earned, isn't it? And this is something that you just had to go with your gut.
Do you think that being a midwife has kind of shaped you to have that mentality? I think there's so much trust that comes with a mother that you've probably never met that they're putting in you.
Yeah.
And it's reciprocated. Like, it's such a huge
Good point. Leap and the faith. Process as well of like giving.
Well, there's no control.
Giving birth to a child, really.
Yeah, and as a woman, you're placing all your trust in me when I'm looking after you.
Yes,
and that is a huge and wonderful responsibility. And I, like, being a midwife is without doubt like the greatest contribution that I could have made to this earth. Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of what I've given back, I know I was a really amazing midwife, and I love being a midwife. Like, it's given me so much. But what it does prepare you for is the unexpected, because being a midwife, you have to be prepared for the unexpected all the time. And then you're also nurturing those, you know, those relationships, because somebody walks into a room, they've come in labour, and, you know, they're in pain, they're uncomfortable, they don't know me from a bar of soap, and you've got to make them feel like they can trust you with their lives and their baby's lives. And yeah, it was, so being a midwife prepared me in a lot of ways, like not just, you know, getting to know people, reading people, but being prepared for the unexpected and being like being adaptable as well.
Yes.
Because you have to be you have to be very adaptable. There's certain, obviously as a midwife, you follow certain processes, but at the end of the day, it's also a very human experience, and so you've got to adapt to those people around you, the doctor, the other midwives, the patients, the families, everyone.
It's being agile.
Yes.
Well, that's it. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's almost in a way that you talked about earlier in the first tribal council, your paranoia was probably at its peak because you were one of the older women,
yep.
And by comparison to the young guys on your tribe and the other tribe.
Yeah,
you know,
I was not the oldest person on my – yeah, I was the oldest person on my tribe. I then found out that there was another older woman and an older male on the other tribe. But I was the oldest person on my tribe. And, you know, there was 13 years difference between Kitty and I when we were out there. And she was the next closest in age to me. Then there was Eden and then there was Mark. So
we chatted on the phone prior to this – today recording and just talking about how it really there was an element there that you recognize and I can understand about the invisible woman component.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you are in your mid-50s and you've sort of played the role of raising your children and you've established a wonderful career, but it isn't the most seen or popular character, say, within the tribe of Survivor, I just wondered about your agility with being a midwife and being able to nurture situations and relationships within the room, sort of set you up almost as your superpower on Survivor.
Yeah.
Because the rest of it, by society standards and stuff, you know, the physical strength and the age and whatever, were the things that can, in social terms, are almost
work
against you.
That's right.
I mean, how did you feel like that played out within the tribe and the people and relationships?
So when we first arrived on the beach, we all stood around in a circle and we all introduced ourselves and we all said our age, we said our names, our age and what we did. And that was really good. And then obviously we went off and started talking to people, and I'm really good at talking to people. I love getting to know people, and I feel like knowing, you know, my kids are 31, 27, just turned 27 and 23. So my kids' demographic were the other, the majority of the tribe. And I felt like I could get to know the young women and young men. It was very easy to talk to them. And I was extremely interested in where they were at in their lives and what they did and what they loved. And, you know, spoke lots to Valeria and Viola and Nathan and Jaden. They were all such interesting people. And, you know, in my head, just kind of knowing where my kids are at and where they were at. And, yeah, it was so fun to get to know people. But getting to know, because my strategy going out there was actually to get in with the younger crowd, but you don't know what you're going to be, like what ages are people and who you're going to connect with. And it just worked out like, you know, Kitty and I locked eyes and that was it. And then I had obviously seen Mark in previous days when we'd filmed the day on the barge, and Eden and Charles. And, you know, obviously we formed the middle-aged mafia pretty quickly. So,
it's such a good name. So are you and Kitty still friends?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you'll always have such a deep bond from doing that.
It was it was such an incredible experience to share together. It's something that, you know, we'll always have together. She's an absolutely wonderful person.
And so with that, like, watched in the episodes, there were moments there, though, for example, where Mark voted against you in tribal council.
Yeah,
that was brutal.
And he had been – you guys had slept next to each other
yes. The
whole entire time. And I just thought, how do you get over that and continue to just forge – and then does it does that stay with you after the show too?
That's a really good question, and I'm really glad you asked it, because out there, I felt like I got to know Mark really well. Obviously, we got to know each other really well, very, very quickly. We're both very strategic, analytical people, and we could see how close he was getting with Viola and Valeria, Kitty. I'm talking about Kitty and myself, and even Eden, and so that was a threat to us. But we still got it. You still got to keep each other on side. And then that night that Valeria said those things about me at tribal council, and then she and Mark obviously tried to vote me out and were unsuccessful. I mean, I was sleeping beside this guy. I'd been sleeping beside him for, weeks. And, you know, when you're sleeping beside each other, you chatter and you talk about your lives. And you know, it's personal. And then that night I came back and I was like, you know, you bloody arsehole.
Seriously?
Yes. Yeah.
He's horrific.
Can you give it to him on camera or off camera or both?
I did.
Makes for great viewing.
I did. I think they showed me calling him a bloody arsehole, and, you know, it was just so unexpected. I mean, you know, he was obviously entitled to, he wanted to get me off. The others wanted to get me off. They tried.
Well, they saw you as a threat, yeah. I guess, too. Like, that's the other thing. It's like they don't want you to win because you're so bloody good.
Yeah, they couldn't get rid of me. But actually what got us back together is, all credit is to Kitty. So Kitty was that really, she just has that ability to bring people back together. She's like, come on, you know, the two of you, we need to get back together. We need to get, you know, the middle-age mafia back together, and we need to get on with this game, and we can't be fighting. We can't live like this. And you know, I'm very much a forgive and forget. And so we ended up making up.
And it's communication.
Multiple times. Well, absolutely.
Like, you guys having it out then, I guess, means that you've done it.
So we loved each
other.
Yeah, we loved each other. We hated each other. We loved each other. We hated each other. We loved each other. We hated each other. And then we loved each other. And now we're really good friends.
Oh, I thought you were about to say, now we don't speak.
No. I probably...
We're actually podcasting with Mark next week.
I have so much respect for him and so much time for him, and I've probably spoken, he's probably one of the people that I've spoken to the most outside this game, outside Survivor.
Just would be so interesting, that dynamic of then coming back into reality.
Yes.
And having these chats with people in what, real life?
Yes. And like I did another podcast, and I cried talking about him, and he cried talking about me.
Well, it is incredibly emotional.
So, yeah. And he made the comment, you know, I'm never going to have a relationship like I've got with Caroline. Like, I've not been through anything like I've been through with Caroline, and I feel exactly the same way. Like, I've never experienced anything like what I've experienced with Mark. And obviously, when you look at the conditions and the circumstances that we were kind of thrust together, and then working together, not working together, and hating each other and loving each other, you know, in the end, all those emotions, you know, you are actually wonderful, and you can put all that aside at the end of the day and say, I love you. So,
yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And at the end, you know, I loved him. Yeah. I thought he was amazing.
With the challenges that happen throughout the series.
Yeah.
I know that they vary and they're not all strength based.
Yeah.
But how did you go, knowing that in your tribe you were one of the, you were the oldest woman there? How did you go and physically cope?
So I'd done, I thought that I'd done quite a bit of physical, like I'd been training with a personal trainer for like a year and a half before I went out there. But like I learned from Kitty, you know, I need to do harder strength training. So all I wanted to do was not be that person that lost a challenge and that would be the reason that we would go to tribal council. I just didn't want to be that person. And I was never that person. But I would walk out there sometimes and walk out to those, especially in that pre-merge game where there were huge physical challenges between the two tribes and multi-layered. And I'd walk out there and my heart would be like racing and thinking, oh my fucking God, like how am I going to do this? But you did it. Like you just, like when Jonathan said, right, players, let's go, you just, that button was flicked and you just got on with it. Like, and I guess that's, you know, where your inner strength comes in. You know, you've just got to really, really back yourself and just think, okay, like, this looks really hard and I know they're doing it easier than I am, but I'll give it everything. I gave everything 1,000% out there.
Do you find that giving it 1,000% and testing yourself is something that's come home with you? And do you find that you're able to, like, things that you didn't see before, i.e. physical challenges in a day-to-day living environment in your normal routine,
yep.
Do you find yourself seeking them and able to do them? Or
yeah, I've come home, my husband has motorbikes and, you know, I've normally been quite scared to get on the back of them. Well, you know, I came home and I'm just like flying down the freeway and at 120 Ks and I'm just like, you know, life is for living. Life is for taking chances. And, you know, you're never going to grow unless you go through hard things. And never have I learned that lesson more than I've learned it in the last year. You've got to go through hard things to really, really know what is amazing in your life. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've definitely come home and definitely taking more risks and definitely, because I'm quite a worrier, I don't feel that burden of worry like I used to feel, which is pretty cool. And, you know, up until about 9 years ago, I suffered terribly from anxiety and panic attacks and panic disorder. And wow, like if that person then could see this person now, like if she knew what if I could talk to that person then and tell her, guess what you're going to be doing in 8 years' time, I wouldn't have believed it then, ever, because that was a really, really hard time. But I did not feel anxious, not once out on that island, ever.
What do you attribute to, was it lifestyle changes that you made or emotional, like did you to be like able mindset? To manage?
Yeah, I think it's definitely mindset, yeah. And, like, I came back and one of the first things I did was, like, I joined a gym because I trained with the most beautiful personal trainer before I went out there. But she was in Melbourne and I was up in northern New South Wales and I just had to, like, physically get into a gym. And so I joined a gym and now I go to the gym four times a week, like, and I'm doing Kitty's program, I'm strength training four times a week and walking and just being extremely active, because I want to be able to, you know, swim in the ocean, I want to be able to go on hikes. Like, my husband and I love hiking. We went skiing for the first time this year. Like, I haven't skied in 16 years. He hadn't skied in 26 years and we had the time of our lives, you know, early this year. Mm. He booked that while I was away. Like, I didn't even know. Like, he just went and did it and he said, you know, and you've got to take those risks. You've got to take, you know, like, yes, I could have gone out and hurt myself, you know, but I didn't, you know.
So do you think he missed you a lot during that time?
Oh, yeah.
Like, was that so difficult?
Yeah, that was I know that was the hardest thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without doubt, that was the hardest thing. Was my husband definitely missed me a lot. It was very difficult for him to see me leave. So he was really excited and everything when I found out I was going on the show. And then the realization that he might not see me for 2 months and not speak to me, there's no contact.
Oh.
It was a lot.
That would be incredibly difficult, the no contact for your loved one,
that's right. And so, I mean, that was my biggest worry going out there, was my husband going to be okay? But I need to do this for me, you know, and I just want him to understand that. And so that's probably was the biggest challenge going out there and has been the biggest change coming back, like the biggest adaptation.
Has your dynamic changed as a couple since you've come back?
Definitely not changed as our dynamic, but I need to be able to go and do those things. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really wanted to go and test myself, and it brought up things for him that were hard. And we went through, you know, coming back into real life was hard when I got back. But it's better than ever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And my husband and I have a very special love. Like, he is my he's the love of my life, so I would never do anything to want to hurt him. But I think we should all be allowed to go and seek our own journeys as well. Mm. And so,
yeah, it's a testament, isn't it, to individuality. There's something to be said about relationships with your children. There's something to be said about relationships with a partner and fostering those, but not at the cost of who you are as an individual.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of us as women fall down, is we take those roles first and foremost as the prominent roles, and then you lose the you part. And I guess there's a period of your life where, I mean, Zoe and I have often discussed that you can't have it all at the same time.
I listened to your podcast and I heard, and I remember.
Thanks, Caroline.
Like, it's quite profound, isn't it? Like, we want it
some,
all.
Some moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Some are a bit of a fumble, but yes.
But you do. You want it all.
Yes.
And it's like we should be able to have it, maybe.
Yeah.
But just, yeah, not everything comes at the same time.
Yes. And that's right. And you've got to be patient, but you've also still got to look after those dreams. You've still got to chase those things that are really, really important to you. And don't forget them, because you can't forget you. Like, you're the most important person in your life.
Mm.
So,
yes, it is. It's a healthy reminder, and it's you were saying then about your coming home and the challenges coming back home with your partner. But was it, what was it outside of that? Was it the surrealism of what you'd been through, and you just, for example, I spoke with a girlfriend of ours that she went to base camp at Everest, and she spent an extended period of time training for that and preparing. And then she went and did it, and it was such a high.
Yeah.
And then she got home and she found coming home really hard.
Yeah.
And she said there wasn't anything to prepare for, because she'd sort of reached that peak. Mm. And then she had talked about how it was a bit of a period of, and I'm not assuming it's going to be similar for you, but I'm fascinated by, and you know, what happens when you do reach a dream and then you have to come back to the normality of your routine.
Exactly. Just in comparison to that, like when we come back, we've got to wait for the show to come out. Do you know what I mean? We don't know how we're edited. So, and
but you're at home with your loved ones during this? Okay,
yeah, good. Yeah.
So are you in a prison?
No. So we came back in September last year, and then the show's not out till February, beginning of February.
Whoa.
So you've got all those months to think about, okay, and to obviously get back into normal routine, which was great. I mean, being able to go to the supermarket and just kind of like
That would be a luxury.
And just like, I want ice cream now. I want a Kit Kat. I want Twisties. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I love those things.
Yeah. I want to shave my legs.
Yeah, and you can do them, and you can have them, and you know, like I even went into the cinema and bought a choc top because I felt like a choc top.
Yeah.
You know, we talked nonstop about food out there.
I can imagine, like, that would almost be torture, though, wouldn't it?
It wasn't like. It was so fun to talk about, because you found out what foods people loved and talked about what foods you loved. And then when I came home and I got back into the gym, it was actually about like eating really well and just eating really cleanly. And I just wanted to take really, really good care of myself and didn't want to put too much shit into my body anyway. But, you know, just back to your point about, you know, coming back and adapting to life, and you know, is there other goals that I have, or you know, what else do I want to achieve? I'm just still coming down from like that finale only a few weeks ago, and you know, there is of course so much more I want to go and do out there. Do I know what that is right now? No, but am I going to trust the process and what's going to come out from this? Absolutely. Mm. I'm really excited about what could potentially come from this, just in terms of, you know, whether that is, you know, being some kind of advocacy work or doing something for women in need. That's probably where my main interests lie. Mm. But I, you know, coming back and getting into real life, I just I just wanted to be with my family. Like, I just wanted to hug people all the time and just be with people that you knew that loved you and trusted yes. you. And
that physical connection.
Yeah.
You would have really ached for that.
Yeah, you do. You ache. Like, you know, you were asking what did I miss the most out there, and it would have definitely been my husband and touch and just that security. But, you know, when you're out there, I kind of like separated myself from all of that, because I think if you let yourself get quite emotional and let that get to you, it could really get to my game, and I didn't want to jeopardize anything. And so I really was able to separate myself. But I don't know whether you girls saw, but on the auction day, we got letters from home. And so we got a letter from your loved ones. Wow. Like, that was what, like,
that's like heart wrenching.
It was gut wrenching. Absolute heart wrenching, gut wrenching. Every single person cried out there.
Yeah.
And did it ever push anyone to go, actually, get me out of here? Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
Just feel like, listen, I've actually had enough. I want to go home today. Thanks.
I feel like you would do that.
100%. I can't even stay the night with people. I'm a homesick person.
Yes you have.
Like, the feeling of homesickness.
I remember you girls talking about, like, when you do sleepovers and Zoe was home by night.
I have to ring mum and be like, got to come pick me up.
Yeah.
Now I just ring Charlie and I'm like, got to come pick me up.
The responsibility is now bestowed upon Charlie.
That's why I'm just, it's so, like, you're so mentally strong doing this and to be able to coach yourself through it.
Yeah, and you have to be. Like, you, otherwise you'd go mad. And so I wanted to enjoy the process. Yes. I wanted to enjoy this experience. I was determined to get on the show. And then once I got on the show, I was like, I'm determined to make this a really positive experience.
Yeah.
I was so determined not to be a mess, I wanted to be strategic. I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be somebody people could come to. I wanted to be a strong person, and I felt like I was that out there. And I'm really proud of myself in terms of how strong I was out there. I didn't know I could do all of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you don't get a lot of downtime out there, and you don't just get a lot of time to sit around. And, you know, you probably saw from the start I had the cooking bestowed on me, and so that was a pressure that I certainly didn't want, because they were like, so who can cook rice? Mum, you can cook rice.
Thanks for that.
And at the time I was delighted because I thought, right, you've got a role.
Well, that's a caring role.
That's
and
right.
A strength that might be a weakness to others, and yes. in turn desired to keep you in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are they going to, you know, get rid of the person that's feeding them every morning and every night?
No. No.
Well, I didn't know, but I thought that was a good possibility that they wouldn't. But, who, you know, it wasn't about that. It was about relationships and alliances. But I've got a rice cooker at home, guys.
I use a microwave pouch, so I'd be dead.
Yeah. It's funny, he's like, so do I, Tilda Basmati.
Yeah. Charlie's like, what are we doing with the rice cooker? I'm like, bin. Never be used again.
Zoe. So yeah, when you're cooking with water and seawater, and you're trying to make different versions of rice and beans, you know, soaking them in seawater.
You could forage.
There was nothing to forage.
And water, were you allowed water?
Yeah, so they had a well, but, you know, you could only go to the well, you know, like, and you, if you went to the well with more than one person, you had somebody, you know, had cameras with you. And if you went on your own, like, I, you know, often we would say, I'm going on my own, don't let anyone come near me, because you'd go and have a good wash or whatever. So,
and I wondered with you, how did it happen? You had that period where you weren't allowed to tell anyone what had happened. You were waiting for the finale to come out. So that would have been almost a difference to then when the finale has come out a couple of weeks ago. And everyone now knows the full evolution of the series,
of the game. Yep.
Like, what are the two different comparative times like?
So I feel like that time that between when we finished filming and the series started, honestly, it felt like it was just never ending. It felt like the show was never going to come. And then once the show came out, we were all, as a group, we were all really tight and in touch with each other all the time and really supportive of each other. And then the closer it got to the finale, you know, I just had to focus on what I did out there and what my journey was, not about anybody else. Mm. And that's, I guess, you know, we as women, we are quite selfless in what we normally do in our everyday lives when we're raising our kids and, you know, in our homes and in our jobs. And I've kind of had to come home and in that post time be a little bit selfish because I need time to myself. I definitely had to stop looking at social media because social media, wow, it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And that was quite difficult to, they warn you about this and I was definitely warned about it, but nothing can quite
nothing
prepare
prepares you.
No. Nothing can prepare you for that hate.
Oh, people are horrific.
Yeah.
Again, my favourite word, lunatics.
Yeah.
They're not 100%.
No. Let's be honest. But then the finale came. And on the night of the finale, I had contemplated prior to that, am I going to have a party? What am I going to do to, am I going to celebrate this? And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to celebrate this. So I had 80 people at a great pub in Melbourne, Yulee's. I probably had the best night of my life, like one of the best nights of my life. I felt like I was so loved and so supported. Always makes me tear up talking about it because it was really hard. And I take nothing away from Ferris and his amazing win. And but you know when you because there was no votes for me, that was unexpected. And I'm not going to focus on that at all. But the love that I felt in that room that night from previous Survivor players, like from Survivor players and all my friends and family, it was amazing. It was just so incredible. And I got to do a really incredible speech and talk about my experience and kind of really let people know how much I loved and was so grateful for their support and their love of for me, because, you know, you're leaving your friends, you're leaving your family, you're leaving all these people to go away for 2 months and, well, however long you're going to be. And, you know, it becomes such a big part of your life that you feel like you've taken so much out of everyone else's life because, I mean, you're gone, so you're not there for them anymore. But then when you come back, all you can talk about is Survivor, and it feels like now's the time to just kind of, I mean, I'm loving talking about it because it was such an amazing experience, but I'm not going to let it define my life.
Mm.
I'm going to let it define me in a way that I can be strong and I can be powerful. I came second in one of the hardest games in the whole entire world, and so I'm going to take as many positives away from that as I possibly can. And as a Survivor fan, like, I got to live like almost every bucket list item there was to tick off as a Survivor fan out there. I got through Tribe Swap. I got to through the merge. I got to go to the auction. I went to the spa. I went on beautiful rewards.
I got brownies. I saw the brownies.
With the ice cream.
I got brownies. Like everyone said, how many brownies did you get? I got 6 brownies. I ate 3 and I ate them very slowly because we had been warned, like, you've got to be careful when you go on these rewards.
Because you could be really sick.
Oh, yeah. And I just ate them really, really slowly. But that was
so did you share the other 3 brownies?
You weren't allowed to.
Ooh.
So what did you do with the other 3?
They took them.
Oh.
And I finished the ice cream. I was lucky enough to finish that. But and of course, I got the letter from home, which going back to talking about before, when I got that, like, I was given it by hand and I could smell it. I could smell my husband. So he had sprayed his cologne on it. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I can smell him. I can smell him. The scent. Oh, my God.
That's insane, isn't it? And it's amazing to be in a position of all the things that you take for granted in life that get removed from you to be able to do this process and then and then be like how much you recognize and appreciate and value such simple things.
Yeah. And he had sent a photo of the kids and a photo of him and I. And I would, so where I slept at the back of the shelter, I had it like above me on the roof above me. And I read that every day. I read that letter every day. I looked at those photos every day. Like it was just awesome. And then when it came to final three, we got our loved ones to come out there. So that when my husband came out there, I mean, fuck, I don't even know how to describe the emotions that were.
So did you know that was happening?
No. So as a Survivor fan, you hope that it's going to happen. But until, you know, Jonathan says, and this, you know, we couldn't let this go by without having a bit of love. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, and the three of us were just
awesome.
Like. That's awesome. It was awesome. Awesome.
So how long did you get with them?
Well, we not long.
5 minutes.
Yeah. We obviously got to hug and talk and interviewed, and then the three of us went on to our final immunity challenge where we were on the big wheels. But and that went for hours and hours. And so what they don't show is that they're sitting there watching us, but they're talking to us. And so we're all talking about, you know, what we're going to eat when we get home. What's the first thing we want to do when we get home?
What was the first thing you ate?
So my husband knew. So there's a restaurant up near where we live called Bang Bang in Byron Bay.
It's so good.
Yum. It's so good. And they have a red duck curry. And he knows that that's my favorite. And he had booked us in for the night after we got home.
I love him.
Oh, that's so good.
I got back to the hotel and he had like a big box from Mecca. So he'd been to Mecca and
bought
body oil and self-care things. I was
him
like,
on to do an episode like, to like, train yes. our husbands.
Because this is
what women want.
Yeah. I was blown away.
Food, makeup.
But like that is really thoughtful.
So thoughtful.
Yeah.
You know what? Distance makes the heart grow. Yeah.
It does. It really, it actually does, because you don't know how much you're going to miss somebody until you go through when you're apart for such a long period of time, and when you don't know when you're going to be seeing them. Like, you could have seen me 2 weeks after it started. I could have been booted, but obviously it didn't happen. But so for him to experience that as well and come out and see all the production and, you know, get to talk to me, like we all talked all together, we talked separately. It was so fantastic. It was so fun.
Well, at least he gets to kind of live a bit of what you have.
Exactly.
So he can understand it.
Yes, yes.
Because I don't think you, unless you've ever been on a TV set or lived that life, you can't comprehend what it's like.
No, and he hadn't. I mean, I've been on movie sets before and I've been on television sets before, as you well know, Zoe, but...
We met on Neighbours. I wasn't a star on Neighbours. My child was.
And I was the midwife. So, it's just crazy, but it was... it was so fun. So to have that moment and that opportunity to see him and love him, and, you know, probably I wouldn't have stayed up on that wheel as long without him there, because, you know, he was just giving me so much strength and talking me through it, because it was painful, guys.
Oh, I can't
it
even.
It was torture.
Terrific.
I can't.
So, okay, in saying that, what's your next challenge? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'll let you know. Yeah, I don't know what that is yet. I look forward to seeing what it is.
But that's the beauty of, again, you saying trust the process.
Exactly what I was about to say. Great mind. ESP. Because when you said before, the woman that you were 8 years ago, had you gone back and told her to the woman you are now, this is what you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And you realise trusting the process. I mean, it's just put that, I think, in having an intentional one foot in front of the other and then trusting that that's going to lead down a certain path, it feels like what I'm hearing from what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the future. There's so much to do, so much I want to do. Where that leads, we'll just wait and see.
It's an adventure.
Yes.
So hindsight, we ask all our guests this question. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from the show, and what would you have done differently, if anything?
What have I learned from the show? Well, I think just going back to what I was talking about earlier, just that inner strength and that inner determination. I think that I didn't know how strong I was and what I could be and what I could do and what I could accomplish. I feel like I ticked off a very big bucket list item doing this for myself, and you know that nothing now is insurmountable. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that I don't think I couldn't do if I didn't want to, and if I put my mind to it.
And is there something that you look back on through the series, and not even in the game playing aspect, but that you feel like you would have done differently for yourself?
There are a few relationship and trust issues that I probably had with a couple of people out there. Would I have been so demonstrative, or that's probably a bit stronger
word. That is such a good word. What does that mean? Seriously, what does that mean?
Well, like demonstrate. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It really demonstrates what you feel and what you want to do.
Yes.
But it's probably a little bit of a stronger word, but
no, I love that word.
But I would handle some relationships a little bit differently, and probably would I show as much of myself as to some people as I did? Maybe not. I don't know.
I so hear you in that.
But are you always going to wear your heart on your sleeve? Like, well, I don't know. It's you, I think.
That's right. It's just the person that I am. I can't
hide it.
Yeah, I can't hide it. I am an emotional person. I do wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm a really big hugger. I'm a very demonstrative person. Like, I'm a very affectionate person. And so am I going to hide that part of me? Absolutely no way. I couldn't do that. But would I do things differently? I'd maybe think things out a little bit more.
I think about this conversation in regards to Survivor, but then I think about it in the terms of being a woman in your mid-50s.
Yep.
And everything that led to this point and everything that culminated to get you to apply and succeed and get to the position that you did in the show. Do you have a hindsight and reflections on your life journey and, you know, path to this point, or something you would go back and nurture to your younger self in periods of doubt of trying to do something for yourself in your dreams?
I think that probably what I would say to my younger self, and I hope I can say to you too, is that don't wait. Like, if there are things that you want to do in your life, I feel like I had to wait until I was 55 to do this. Why didn't I do it earlier? Why didn't I think I could do it earlier? Was there not time and space in my life that I didn't make to do something like this earlier? And so I would encourage you, and I would encourage other younger women, and especially women my age, that age is no barrier. Like, you can still go out and be a different version of yourself or challenge yourself in ways that you never knew how. And I hope I can inspire other middle-aged mafias to do that.
I think that is
I'm
so
much.
Oh, so that got you.
That
it's not
got
like me crying.
I don't know.
I'm
why.
Not relishing in your tears, but I can't.
No, that was good.
No,
that was so
it was
good.
Incredibly well
but
said.
But it is. It's don't wait.
Don't wait.
No, and that's the thing we do.
Well, you always think there's not enough time, or
that's
I can't
right.
do that now.
We
or,
can't yeah. afford it. It's we yes. don't have the time. We're not making enough space in our lives to do the things that really are enriching us in ways that we never knew how. And you don't know until you've done something like that, you've actually
yes.
done the hard stuff and gone and done something that's going to really test you, that you can realize actually what you've got at home is also really beautiful.
And that tests you.
Yes, yes, that tests you too. So
oh,
well
Caroline,
said. Thank you.
I loved that.
Oh, thank
I won't
you.
Be doing Survivor.
That's okay. It's not for everyone.
But it's insanely amazing what you've done.
And thank achieved. You. And we're just, yes, I feel like it's a real privilege to get the opportunity to speak to an array of people on this podcast and this series. But it's so wonderful to speak to someone who's gone out and truly challenged themselves in the truest form and achieved what you did, and especially that reminder that of the we are incredibly capable.
Don't wait.
Don't wait. Yeah. Thank you.
You're so welcome. This has been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Not Super Woman. You can find extra resources, links and information on our website, which is notsuper-woman.com.
Is that a dash or a hyphen?
A dash is a hyphen, Rash.
Wonderful.
And if you're enjoying what we're bringing, you can follow us on our socials, and we're across all podcast platforms. So hit subscribe, guys.